Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With Alan and Daniel, we'll talk about the Cardinals all night long. Everyone come gather round, listen to your favorite sound. We'll talk about the Cardinals all night long. We'll talk the games and all the rest, about the team that we love best. We'll talk about the Cardinals all night long. We're gonna talk about the Cardinals all night long.
Good morning. Welcome into another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptall, C70 of the Bat at C70 on Twitter. I got Alan Medlock for Red Dart Red Bird, Abe Medlock 1 with me again this week. And Alan, last week we were talking, we were looking at the team, and you know, they were pretty good shape. They just, you know, split with the Brewers, and we thought, hey, the Cubs and the Marlins are coming in. That's a good chance to start, you know, making some distance up, because the Brewers were playing the Blue Jays and I think the Rays. It didn't go that way. 3-3 over that span, lost, you know, now they're sitting in second place. What'd you think out of the last six games? Is there something that bugged you, or something that caught your eye?
No, I feel like you blew your chance on the Sunday game against Chicago. Of course you do. Giving up the 5-run inning. I mean, that's one of those things. And there's not a lot of panic in me right now. I kind of thought that they would still be in first place at this point. And, you know, they got a gift last night by Pittsburgh beating Milwaukee. But no, I mean, it's, you know, ebbs and flows, essentially. I'm not overly concerned about it. I feel like the one that got away is that one in Chicago. Here's the thing. You're one pitch away from a 3-game sweep, and you just got beat with your best arm in the bullpen by a guy that can hit. You know, those things happen. It's not like there was a mistake made either way. He just hit a fastball. Then you tip your cap to him with that. So, and that's going to go one way or the other. You still win that series, but the one you're going to regret is blowing the lead against Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating because there are, you know, out of those six games, they won three and probably should have won two more.
Yeah.
But you're right. You know, the game in the game on Wednesday night, you did everything right. It just happens. That is some of baseball. And there's games that you're going to win like that, that you shouldn't, and stuff like that. But yeah, getting up 5-0 on the floor. And then again, you know, the game gets thrown into a little bit of a uproar when Flaherty has to leave. You know, Ollie Marmol has done a pretty good job this year of managing bullpen, managing a lot of things. But I don't quite understand the idea of going to Nick Whitgren there. I know it's a 5-run lead, and he did get one inning of good ball, but why aren't you going to – you've got Jake Woodford out in the pen, who's a guy that's ready to be stretched out. Why aren't you going to somebody that you expect to go 3 or 4 innings there instead of a guy like Whitgren, who's, you know, at best going to give you 2 – and turned out to not only that, not only give you just 1+, but to give up the game. I was just a little bit surprised at that. You know, I would have thought even going to Oviedo first, because Oviedo's had some, you know, longer innings. He's coming out of a starter. I don't quite get why they went to that, except for the fact they were up five.
Yeah. Do you feel like there is a, there's predetermined guys that they're going to use and they're going to use them, you know, and it's, I know it's because I've noticed that they've sat guys longer than normal that they have in the past and have been really protective of some other guys. So I would assume that you're probably right. It's because of the lead, but I feel like there is a chart about how these guys are getting used and they stick to it pretty regularly.
I think there's some of that. Definitely. I think they have some ideas of yeah, okay, this guy got used, so we're not going to go to him today or whatever the case may be. You know, I do think some of that gets thrown out of whack. You know, I know there's weeks that, excuse me, you know, that Helsley or Gallegos have sat for like a week. But it's like, okay, well, there hasn't been a game that works for them. You know, you don't really want to use them in a big blowout game and you don't want to use them in a blowout game the other way. I think in the past we would have seen, you know, Helsley or Gallegos pitch in a meaningless game after 3 days just because they needed to. And they're not doing that. They're actually saving their bullets for when they matter. And so far it seems to work. I, you know, we've always talked about, you know, do they need regular work? You know, are they going to be rusty after a week off? They haven't seemed to be. So I guess maybe there's something working, but yeah, I think they do. I think they have it kind of plotted out as, you know, this is who we want to use here. Now we might have to go this way or that way with the game, but they have an idea of how the usage is going to be, which is interesting.
Yeah. That's, It seems to be a, you know, they deviate from the script a little bit in a competitive nature, but it there definitely seems to be one to me. You know, I just don't feel like they've used it in the same nature that Schilt actually did. And they're definitely not as married to things as Matheny was. So it's, you know, I just think that that's the analytical approach that we're seeing just about out of every ball club. And it's kind of shown more now just because some of the usage numbers seem to indicate that. And then some of the guys that, you know, I mean, we know the names. It's, you know, when Verhagen was healthy and when Whitgren was there, there was a little bit of trash time innings for those guys because they could throw multiple. But now you kind of see they're still a little bit married to that with small deviations.
Yeah, it is very interesting. You're right. We don't seem to see, except for TJ McFarland when he was healthy, we never saw anybody that approached the usage of a Matt Bowman or anything like that, a guy that had to pitch almost regularly, you know, three times a week or something of that nature. We haven't seen that. And even McFarland was pitching more in games that were already decided. You know, he didn't really often come into a game that was still in the balance. So yeah, I think there's definitely been a revamp of how pitchers are being used. And maybe that comes from, you know, when Ollie Marmol was coming through the minor leagues, they were doing the piggyback thing, right? I mean, yeah. I think they were doing some of that piggyback starter stuff in the back. So they may be more used to planning out your bullpen because of that. And they're just taking advantage of that at the major league level. I don't know, but you're right. I think there's been a different approach. And except for McFarland and Whitgren and I guess Verhagen, although, you know, they keep expecting, I think, more out of Verhagen. You know, pretty much everybody in the bullpen can be used in so many different ways that and be trusted. I think that was part of the problem of the last few years is they only wound up with having like a couple arms they trusted. And so they went to them all the time. Whereas now, if there's a lead, you feel like pretty much anybody can hold it.
Yeah. It's, I completely agree with that. I mean, it's, they're so fledgling when you start relying on them. You know what I mean? That whenever we start having a lot of confidence, this would blow up. But this is maybe one of the best they've looked in a while. I mean, last year with Reyes, we knew the electric stuff, but we knew the walks was an issue. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, it was a little bit with Cabrera as well. He was so wild. Yep. But this year, it seems a little bit locked down. I feel like Helsley's where he needs to be. And, I mean, that could just be because I'm a huge fan. But it does seem like they're a little more locked down than normal, and it's actually been a lot of fun to watch some of the management of how they've had to, how to handle the back part of it. Because I mean, 2 years ago, did we ever think that we'd see Gallegos in the sixth inning? And that's kind of normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They're not locked down to, they feel like they're getting to where Helsley is going to be a ninth, eighth, but he could be an eighth or ninth inning guy too. Right. Yeah. I mean, they're willing to go two innings with him, which is not something we've seen on a regular basis out of a quote, quote closer. But you know, yeah, I think they're definitely looking at leverage and who's coming up. And I mean, cause we've seen that, right? It's like, you know, Marmol says, hey, I've gone to this guy cause otherwise they'd have gone to a lefty here and, or they would have gone to a lefty, you know, down the road. We would have had to do that. You know, they definitely seem to be thinking two or three steps ahead on these things, which even if past management has been doing that, we haven't necessarily seen that or understood it as well, but it does feel like they're taking a more clear-eyed approach to some of this and saying, okay, it's not that I need to bring in my best guy here. I need to also think about what the other team's going to be doing.
Yeah, that's and you know, this, I know this opens up wounds. Are you surprised that there's as much of this with the DH as normal? Because honestly, it hasn't felt like that much of a difference to me as far as in-game moves. And maybe that's for the fact that I was resigned to the DH probably 5 years before we got it. You know, has it made any difference to you as an opponent of the DH?
I think it's hard to know. I do imagine that the DH has helped because we have seen so often that a pitcher will come in the bottom of one inning and then pitch the next inning. You know what I'm saying? Like an inning and two thirds, an inning a third, or even if an inning, but it stretches over two frames. And, sure. And Mike Shildt did that some, even last year, somewhat to avoid the three batter minimum, which may have something to do with this as well.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I mean, there is that. I mean, you are able to go with a guy that's, you know, if you want to bring in Zach Thompson in a close game, he can go three innings and you don't have to worry about pinch hitting for him. I mean, there is that. I will grant you. I don't think I had thought about necessarily how the DH was going to affect the pitching moves in general, except for the fact that I always felt like it was going to make a guy like Sandy Alcantara get to pitch a complete game, you know, because, you know, he wouldn't have, I mean, without the DH, he wouldn't have been in there in the eighth or ninth last night, right?
No. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, and so, you know, I always felt like you were going to get burned by some big, you know, some starter that normally would come out of a game and you could get into a bullpen that doesn't have to come out of a game. But yeah, for the pitching moves, it probably has made an impact. I have no doubt. I think more than anything, more than the DH, and I may be wrong, maybe it's my bias, but more than the DH, I just think it's the fact that they have so many guys out there that are long inning guys. Because and that may be more of the three batter minimum and things of that nature that are playing into that. But, you know, you've got Oviedo, you've got Thompson, you've got, you know, even Verhagen can go at least two, you know, when Palante was out there. You got guys that can go a long period of time. And so you can cover a game, you know, when a starter only goes, you know, three or four with a couple of those guys, or maybe even just one, and you then get back to, you know, a regular thing. I think it's just the variety and the, you know, the depth of the long arms out there is probably the biggest thing, but the DH does play a part.
Yeah. And you know, it's one of those, I guess, for lack of a better term, I keep beating a dead horse on Reyes, but I feel like Reyes would have been really good in this scenario to where they could extend his innings. You know, it's just a sad state of affairs with him. And for me to be such a big fan, I kind of wish that we would have seen the best that we could. And that, you know, my theory was we're going to see his best with another team. And that probably seems possible if he ever comes back.
Yeah. And that's the difficult thing to see if he ever comes back is the kicker. And, you know, I hate to say it, and we've talked about it, I think, before, but Jordan Hicks is kind of running along those same lines, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's not only Hicks, I feel like Thompson is falling in, and we can get into that here in a second, but yeah, you're right, of this, the narrative of a few guys.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought
we kind of had the same issue that we had last week. So no. I interrupted you, but yeah, the Hicks and Reyes being similar kind of reminds me of how it already feels like Thompson is going to follow in those Gomber footsteps as far as usage is what I was going to say. So not really a lot bigger point.
Yeah, I get you. And maybe I think Thompson is, yeah, you may be right, because Gomber then wound up in the rotation, and Thompson still, I think, has a chance to do that. I don't feel like, I think Oviedo maybe now getting into that. They're going to use him in the bullpen just because he's been more effective there. But I don't think I would rule out them still using Thompson just because they're using him in 2-3 inning stints consistently. Versus like a Helsley, who they've turned into, you know, or in the past a Rosenthal or Reyes or something like that, where they turned into like the closer, or Hicks, and he's only pitching one inning or something, and he's that, you know, flamethrower and stuff. I think with Wade Thompson's pitching, I still think that if there's a rotation spot open, probably next year, because I don't think they, you know, we can talk about the rotation here a bit, but if we're getting to the point where you can't afford to take another guy out of the bullpen to put the rotation, but you know, sometime next year, depending on what the rotation looks like, I think he could still be there.
Well, even with, I agree with that. And that's something I'd actually like to see. So are we seeing to go on with the rotation? Mm-hmm. I know that we heard Marmol this week, or read Marmol this week, about how this was, they hope that this is an extended look at Liberatore. Is this what they want to see happen? You know, do they want him to take hold of this rotation spot and then start figuring it out from there? You know, I know that's kind of a stupid question because that's always what you want to see, but is this the chance they're just like, okay, now your season, now you know what it's like, take this and run with it, and let's redirect on what we have to do with the deadline?
I'm sure they'd love to see him do that. I don't know, though. I mean, I guess it's going to depend a little bit on what Steven Matz does, because Steven Matz had his first rehab assignment this week and pitched a couple of innings. Obviously, given what happened with Jack Flaherty, although it is a different situation with Matz being a little bit more established player, but it's unlikely they're going to try to rush him back necessarily. But you figure in, you know, there's at least a couple of weeks here, maybe to the All-Star break, where Liberatore is going to have, you know, 2 or 3 shots at it. If he looks like he has figured it out and he's ready to compete at this level, then I think they'll find a way to probably keep him in the rotation. I don't know, but you know, he's still kind of bouncing around and struggling a little bit at Memphis at times. It may be a lot to ask for him to just kind of flip a switch and be, you know, good enough in these next three to say, hey, he's going to help him in that rotation the rest of the year. But yeah, I think this is a situation where they're saying, look, it's not your first go around. You know, those kind of, you know, nervous jitters are worn off. Let's see what you can do when you know you've got another start coming. And we'll see. I mean, it may be that all clicks for him.
No. So that's, it would be nice to see. I mean, it would alleviate a little bit of pressure. But you know, what do you equal Liberatore to right now, as far as guys that we'd seen in the past as his trajectory and struggles and successes?
Ah, boy, that's a tough, cause I can't think of my head beat as part of I don't know. I mean, he hasn't had the injury problems. See, a lot of the guys that we've seen, have had it. I mean, are you looking at a guy? I don't remember, because Lance Lynn started out in the bullpen, but he didn't really struggle much when he went into the rotation, except for the Lenning, of course, the one inning that he would always have a blow up. I mean, if you could match Liberatore to Lynn, I think you'd late that all day, right? I mean, if he turned into the same kind of pitcher than that. I don't know that they match up, you know, from pitch wise and stuff like that. But, you know, just thinking about a guy that came up. But then again, Lynn started the bullpen, and Liberatore really hasn't had to pitch out of the bullpen. So I don't know who you would match that up with. Do you have any ideas?
No, it was funny because we've seen the prospects, and you know, we've seen similar, but he's kind of hard to narrow down for me. And I, you know, it's funny, in the past, how quickly would we have seen him with the issues that they've had in the past, and you know, the quick promotions that they've had to do with some rotation pieces. I mean, I feel like I say that, but they were pulling every lever last year, and and still didn't bring him up. But I think that's probably more to more to 2020 than it was to 2021, if you know what I mean. I mean, that's, you know, lack of development, lack of competition. But it's funny, when you see him and you see his name, he's kind of a forgotten guy for being a top three prospect in the organization.
Yeah, I mean, once you see a guy come up, it's like he automatically comes off of some prospect list. You know what I'm saying? True. Mentally, because it's like, you know, you look at these guys and like, you know, they're just now, some of them probably just now getting to where they're losing their rookie eligibility. But you know, they've already been kind of dismissed. At least here, it's like they're not prospects; they're players. And that's true. I mean, to some degree, you know, they're contributing now, which is better than hoping they contribute in the future. I don't know. I'm very interested. I think that, you know, again, we often expect these guys, especially these hyped prospects, to come in and just be awesome to start with. Right. And we forget that it takes some, you know, there's going to be some struggles. There's going to be some setbacks. There's going to be, you know, some figuring it out, and Liberatore could still be a very good pitcher, you know, I don't know if he's the top of a rotation guy, but, you know, second or third pitcher in a rotation in a couple of years, even if he's struggling now. So, you know, hopefully, I think in our instant gratification society, we tend to write people off very quickly. And hopefully that doesn't happen, because I think he still has some learning to do. I mean, we're, you know, especially like you said, 2020 was a year that he was in the extended camp or whatever, but that's not quite the same. Although it's better than a lot of guys got.
Sure.
And so he's still got some learning to do, and hopefully he can do it at the big league level, and hopefully he contribute. But it'll be interesting. I mean, cause he's going to go up against he's going up against Philly, and even with Bryce Harper out, the one thing they can do is hit, and especially in that ballpark. So if he can have a good outing this weekend, you know, that probably gets some people excited.
Yeah, I would think so. And that's the one thing I can't. I hate the out of division games, especially on stuff like this on the road games, because holiday weekend, the place is going to be packed and they'll probably hit 20 home runs. You know what I mean? And I'm not really sure how good the Phillies are, you know, type of situation. Right. But you're right. I mean, if he could slow down that offense, it would be pretty big. Still got Schwarber, so.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Schwarber always destroys the Cardinals.
Exactly. So and that's how I looked at Garcia on Wednesday night. Mm. Now, he always hits a big bomb against the Cardinals.
He's done some damage against them for sure. There are those guys around the league. You know, we've talked before about, you know, Ian Happ and stuff that for the Cubs. You know, that's why it's always so fun to see that. You know, read about Cub fans who just really hate Harrison Bader because he always seems to tear them up. And it's like, wow, good. Somebody does it to somebody else. It's always good to see the other side of those things. But, talking about this, I mentioned Jordan Hicks earlier. He's had two rehab outings now. Actually, two or three. I can't remember. No, three, I think. But this was the second of his back-to-back. Gave up 5 runs in 1 inning, which is not great. Struck out a guy, didn't walk anybody. He could be activated this weekend. I'm not to the point. If they activate Jordan Hicks this weekend, I hope they're sending him to Memphis and letting him play pitch out there. I still don't know. And of course they see more than we do. But just the surface level stuff. And given where he was at before he was hurt, I don't know that I think he could use a lot more time in Memphis is what I'm saying. Maybe that's wrong, but I don't think they should just bring him up because he was on the major league roster.
Yeah, as in, let's see this play out and let's be as patient as possible. And you know what? I feel like with him, they have been, you know, mm-hmm. But yeah, you may be right on that. I mean, that's because there's no urgent need. You know what I mean? No matter the knee jerk reaction of the homer on Wednesday and, you know, whatnot, blowing the lead with the circumstances last Sunday, mm-hmm. you know, that you may be right. And that stay down, work it out a little bit, and we'll figure out a role when you get back. At least one thing that we talked about last week, it seems like that the starting issue, at least for this year, is dead. And they're going to bring him back to the role that I feel like he thrived in the best, and that's late innings. And, you know, hopefully we can see him and see a little more strikeouts and, yeah. You know, let's just see what we can get. But you're right. I mean, there's no urgent need, so let's not just rush it back.
Yeah. Looking at it, in Memphis, he's had four games, five innings, seven earned runs, seven hits, four walks, five strikeouts. Yeah. I mean, again, he's coming back from injury and all that. I'd like to see at least, you know, I don't think they have to bring him back from rehab today. I mean, they still got time. And I don't think there's any need. Just hold off. And I'm sure if they bring him up, I'm sure he can contribute. But I do, especially in that. But I think the control issues are still there, which is he's going to have to get that under control. He's never struck out as many as you think he should.
And that's has always been my issue. And I thought in the beginning it was just because he's trying to overpower people fastball, but it's never improved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when you mix those things together, you know, given what the bullpen is looking like right now, is he better than, you know, TJ McFarland? Yeah, sure. If you're going to replace him or a Wittgren or something with the Jordan Hicks, you're doing all right. I can do that. But if you're going to, you know, if you have to send down a Thompson or something like that to get him in here, because I don't know what that roster move would be, I guess, to bring him back. I don't know. Okay, I'm just gonna skimming through here. You know, McFarland's on the injured list. I guess you send down Packy Naughton. Like Packy's the one that gets. You have to pay attention though for him on that. The five options, right? I haven't been keeping track, but. You know, they only get five options this year for a guy, or, you know, up and down. And Naughton's going to be getting pretty close. I think he came up once as a 27th man. I'm sure that would count. But, I mean, that's the other factor to this, is you can't just continue to send a guy like that back and forth. So if you bring up a Hicks for him, he may have to stay down. And I don't know what they're going to do with Nail and stuff like that. But, I don't know. The wording of the, you know, of how I'm hearing the reporting makes me feel like we'll see a roster move today, but I kind of hope we don't.
Yeah. You're pretty passionate about this one.
Well, I mean, I hate to say it that way.
It caught me for a second. I was like, man, but no, I know what you mean. And it is funny. One of those, the limited options is one of those things that you just never hear about too much. And you wonder, it's one of those we probably won't as well. But it adds for some intrigue on some of these guys that, you know, the St. Louis in particular, mainly because everything we fine-tooth comb their decisions. But, you know, it's those guys that ran the Memphis train forever, it just can't happen. And I'm glad it can't happen. You know, it's just one of those that we're never going to hear that. You think it would have to be a catastrophe if we do hear it for another organization. You know what I mean? I mean, it's going to have to be a big deal, but yeah, it is kind of funny that's one of those that you see his name on the transaction wire almost every week. And then you have to realize that that's limited. So they're going to have to do some things with that.
Yeah. I think there's somebody we're going to hear about from someplace, whoever the first guy is, it has to be released because they've reached five. It'll be news, and then you won't ever hear it again. But, I don't know. And again, you know, I'm talking about Hicks here. this organization has kind of proven that they don't necessarily just do things because that's what needs to be done. I think that in the past, if, you know, after Jordan Hicks had pitched this innings, they'd say, okay, you're good, and come up. They still may, but I think that this is an organization that it feels like, at least as of late, is taking a little bit harder look at things and not just doing them because they're supposed to do them.
Yeah. You know, that's well, and it's funny, they've I feel like they have gotten away from the path of least resistance the past couple of years. Yeah. I mean, now in the trade deadline, I feel like they're pretty bold into that. But it's I have noticed that that there's has been some changes, that they've let things go a little longer than normal and then pulled them back. Like, it really surprises me how they handled Flaherty. And I know that's a topic that we were going to get into, because I'll be honest with you, him coming back and getting hurt was the first time I've ever heard them play the card of, hey, the player has a say in this as well. And yeah, and I'm serious. I mean, I don't know if I remember that comment in recent memory. And that's what surprised me about it. And I was like, well, crap, you know, that's new to me, because they've always seemed like so sticklers and staunch about those things to kind of throw, you know, slightly throw him under the bus a little bit. And then, you know, kind of turn that into a media barrage. I don't know. That whole situation was handled poorly, I thought.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird for. It always feels like, even though, and this is why people think Jack Flaherty doesn't want to be in St. Louis, even though there's no real indication of this, or that the organization doesn't want Jack Flaherty in St. Louis, even though there's no confirmation of that at all. And you know, if you talk to the reporters who point out how much he really does seem to like being in St. Louis, his connections with Bob Gibson, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, when it always seems to be Jack Flaherty that they go out and put their foot in their mouth with, or, and it's partly, I mean, you know, like this winter, you know, because Jack came back on, you know, social media, he kind of stirred it after they talked about his injury, you know, and I will say probably my guess is that Jack is probably one that is more willing to take control of his career, let's say.
Yeah.
That he probably did push for it. And I think he had a valid point. Don't get me wrong. Sure. I mean, he was tearing up the minors, but that's different, you know, when you don't have the pressure of the game on you. So I can understand why he'd say, look, I'm healthy, but I need that intensity. But so, yeah, but you know, Mo's got to sign off on that too. I mean, I know the player has to say, and player can tell you when they're done, but I don't think the player can be activated without, you know, and I guess that's a technicality that you could, you know, the player could end his rehab, but then just sit, but that you're not likely to do. But I think that it was a little less than diplomatic for Mo to go out and say, well, you know, look, I mean, you know, his way of not saying anything while saying something, I guess.
It
just seemed a little bit strange.
Sure. No, I agree. It was funny. I was like, this is off the script a little bit whenever that happened. And but you're right. I mean, it does seem to always fall back on Flaherty a little bit. And it's, you know, one, I applaud that, you know, for some of the ways that he's approached his career and the way that he's going to handle things. And it's probably going to be a very outward, how do I say this, negotiation on whether they're going to sign him back or not. Or there's some then that may be right, that's resigned to the fact that that's not going to happen regardless. So I don't know it, but you're dead on that. It seems like all the controversy always kind of circles around him, not necessarily to any fault of his own.
Yeah, I was just doing a real quick search. I can't remember the last time I heard Michael Gersh's name. That's why I was looking to see if there was any news or anything. I guess he is still mentioned occasionally, but you know, for a guy that is the general manager, we never talk about Michael Gersh. I don't know. I mean, so what are your expectations for Flaherty then coming in this rest of this year? I mean, because it seems like pretty clear he's not going to be pitched before the All-Star break. He does say he's going to pitch this year, but you know, what do you think? And does that mean they go get a starter?
Yeah, I mean, I'm skeptical on that, but you know, this is also, I mean, I've said this for 3 years. One of these years, they're going to go out and they're going to pull something pretty big. I don't know if there's enough pitching out there that we would consider big. You know, I don't know, but I don't know if this is the team that's right there that's competitive that you think. I mean, they could be an NLCS team pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Can you afford not to? Is my thing. I mean, are you that comfortable with Jack coming back that you not to do something? And that kind of goes back into the Liberatore argument of at what amount of success will he need to make them not do anything? I mean, in a typical organization, is it one of those that's like, hey, he's done well above and beyond what we expected, we're not doing anything? To one, it's like, hey, let's just put the pedal to the metal and do something regardless. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I'm always, always skeptical of them making the big, big move.
Yeah, I don't see them. They're not going to do a Montas or anything.
I see that's kind of, that's where I was directing that as well.
Yeah, I don't. And mainly because right now, I mean, to get a guy like that, you'd have to give up a Walker or a Win, right?
Yeah.
I think. Because I don't know. The Cardinals have other pieces in their minor leagues, but I don't know that anything would headline a deal. Because even if you try to trade Paul DeJong over there, you know, you're going to have to sign something along with him quite a bit, probably, and eat a lot of that salary. So you're looking at a guy, you're looking at somebody that's, you know, I don't want to say John Lester, J.A. Happ, but you're probably in that, you know, in that range. Hopefully somebody's been a little bit more effective this year. The guys on Cardinal off day talking about trade possibilities, and Ben Godard mentions Perez out of Texas, which would seem to be a reasonable deal. Yeah. Guy's having a good year, but he's got a 1 year contract and hasn't necessarily had this kind of a success in the past, but you know, has had enough that would work. I mean, that kind of guy would make sense. But it does feel like they've got to do something. I mean, they got Adam Wainwright, they got Miles Michaelis, they've got Dakota Hudson. You know, you hope that Steven Matz is going to be back pretty soon. But yeah, right now it's you know, it's a Liberator, it's Pallante. Guys that are, you know, especially Pallante has proven to be pretty effective. But, you know, if you can get a starter and move him back into that, you know, mid-inning relief role he was good at, that just strengthens the team. Even though he's fine in the rotation, that just strengthens the team if you can get a guy that's better than him into that role. I feel like they just about have to, especially if Matz comes back and is less than they expected, you know, from when they signed, because he's gonna probably take a little time to find his footing still, and he was already up and down before he got hurt.
Yeah.
But if there's any kind of setback with him or something or anybody else, and you're really getting to the point where you've got to be talking about him now and hoping you can make a deal.
Exposed a little bit. That's whenever we start to trade discussions like this, especially on these, second tier isn't necessarily fair. I just don't have a better term for it. I always look at the teams they have a trade history with, you know, and Texas isn't one of those, you know, there's been a lot, there's been a ton of guys that would have been a great fit that they never pulled the trigger on guy, you know, with teams. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder, I'm like, hey, let's probably, you know, Cleveland, I think that's not as much as it used to be. But there's always those kind of things where I'm like, does Mo usually make the first phone calls and see where the chips fall on that? And you always feel like you can get a third or fourth starter out of something like that, which could be exactly what they need and be huge.
Yeah, but, you know, like you say, Cleveland is a place where they've gone to quite often, and they're only a game out of in the Central.
I feel like Cleveland's they're not good.
Yeah, Toronto's a guy Toronto's a place that they've had a number of trades with. And while they're 12.5 behind the Yankees, they're tied for second, you know, and that division's just crazy because of the Yankees. The
East may have four teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, Tampa Bay, 40-35, and they're 15 games out in fourth place. I mean, that's insane. You know, I'm trying to think where else. I mean, we could always remember the trade with Miami, but I don't know that they've done that regularly. And I don't know that Miami has, I mean, they're probably out of it for this year, but you know, what pieces do they have, if anything? Yeah. They're not going to trade Alcantara back, so that's the problem.
Wow, I know it.
You know, but you know, so you look around the league, and of course, this is the whole thing with expanded playoffs: is more teams think they're in it, even if they're not, and so your sellers get concentrated into, you know, three or four teams, unless you do a type of strength for strength type of move.
Yeah,
which
hardly ever happens anymore. Yeah. Right.
And even if they did that, I don't know what that strength is for the Cardinals. I mean, they can trade Burleson and, you know, as a top prospect, I guess, and try to get some pitching back. But the Cardinals have quality around, but I don't know that they have that, you know, that depth that we've talked about in the past when they traded Alcantara and Weaver and, you know, that trade with the Marlins produced four major leaguers, right? Because, was it Castos or whatever? The fourth piece has been starting for them. You know, Gallen was in that. You know, but they had like all this. We said at the time, man, you know, those are good pitchers, but there's so many pitchers. We don't have that. There's not that depth of outfield that they had over the last few years, you know, when they traded off Rosarena and others. They've got quality and they've got some depth, but I don't think they have just that, you know, huge pool where they could trade something good and not miss it.
Yeah. It's funny how the DH can completely change the way that you look at it, because now you're just like, well, I don't think it's really fair to let Burleson go. You know what I mean? Cause now I kind of want to see what he could do as quickly as he's hit and move through the system. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's one of those, we're always going to point to the outfield, but you know, I feel like that's cemented to what we have now. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that trade piece would be. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, this conversation about trading strength for strength frustrates me more when you see that the Brewers have done it and brought back Adames. You know what I mean? I mean, these things can get done. You just don't see them that often. But, I mean, that was a huge piece for them. That's, you know, it's – I wish the Cardinals had that kind of aggression at some point or that mindset that they can move some things to improve, you know, a one for one type deal. We just never see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I do think that Paul DeJong can be a trade piece, but he's not a headliner. No. He's closer to a throw in. And I mean, of course I haven't seen anything about, he left the game on what, Wednesday with a hand. Yeah. I haven't seen anything about that.
I haven't. Yeah.
But he's not, I mean, he's got 11 homers, which is great.
Yeah.
But he's hitting like 217 down there in Memphis, striking out, walking. I mean, it's basically, except for a little bit extra power, it looks like what he did at the major league level. And yeah. I don't know, when you're doing the same thing at AAA, how many people are even wanting to take even if you pay that reasonable salary. I don't know how many people want to take a chance on that. They would if, as a throw in, but that's about it.
Well, and you're right. I mean, I feel like two things have pointed to the Wally Pipp comment from Mo told me a lot. And then Sosa playing well when he's gotten the chance has told me a lot. I would assume at this point they have gone to or are going to DeJong and saying, hey, where would you like to go? And can we find a spot that would be favorable? Would you be, you know, is that something? Just because that's kind of their history with these guys that have been successful with them in the past. It lessens the blow in a potential trade. If you remember last year, right after the deadline, he made the comment of, I didn't think I would be back, you know, type situation. I was wondering if I was going to get traded, which means that's probably in the mindset right now. And I think that you could sell the heck out of that for a guy needing a new what am I looking for?
Change of scenery.
Change of scenery. I feel like you could sell that to the player and to your organization really quickly.
Yeah, maybe so. We were talking about Paul DeJong on the Talking About Birds podcast this week. I was over there with them, and you know, they pointed out that, you know, the middle infield depth is to the point that you'd have to take quite a bit to actually get to where you want to see Paul DeJong, right? Because you've got Edmund, you've got Donovan, you've got Sosa, you've got Gorman. Almost all of those can play shortstop if they had to. I don't know about Donovan. I know Gorman can, but the other two can. But, you know, you've got a middle infield that's fairly deep. And it's really hard to see where you could even get him on the roster as a utility guy, you know, as the, you know, backup defensive replacement type, over any of those guys. Right. So, yeah, I just, it really does feel, and I hate to see it. I mean, cause the way, you know, DeJong had started out his career, but it really feels like if he's ever going to click it, he either has to do something like Matt Carpenter did this off season, which is, you know, go figure out how to revamp his front swing or get better somehow, or it's going to take a change of scenery, and which is probably meaning trading someplace where a coach can say, hey, you're doing this wrong. Yeah. You know, the way he's doing it right now is, it's just not going to work.
Yeah. And it's, they've played so much. It's more fluid without him. And, you know, it's, there was the feeling that he had been what was pulling him down the past few years. And that's, and that's tough, you know, especially for a guy that I was a fan of his number, but you see what happens and how much more exciting they can play without him. You know what I mean? And I can't stand saying that about a single guy, but boy, you can just really tell the difference.
Yeah. It's different. And again, you know, he brought a lot of defense, especially was, you know, not a problem, but the whole outlook of the team seems to be a little bit different when, you know, and again, this right now, this offense doesn't have maybe catcher a spot where you just like, nothing's going to happen here. You know, yep. Somebody's going to be able to do something, probably not always happens, but you know, catcher again, you know, if Herrera can find his footing, or, you know, Kisner seems to have, you hate to write off Kisner at all because he hasn't had a whole lot of chances, but you thought maybe with the more regular playing time with Molina out, he would have clicked a little bit more, and it hasn't yet. And I do get a little concerned when Albert Pujols is in the lineup, just because, you know, I like to see Albert, but when he gets a hit, it's almost a surprise now. unfortunately.
Yeah, how the mighty have fallen. You know, it's nuts. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah.
And there is, if he hits another home run, and I think it's safe to say if he hits another home run, or if he has another big hit, you know, the place is going to go nuts. It's going to be amazing. And I get that. And I'm fine with that. And I think he should play some. But I also realize that I just don't have very much expectations for him.
Sure.
And he's in the box. Just, that's the way it is. You're right. If you're 40 something, you know, years old, that's going to happen. You know, the only, except for Nelson Cruz, I guess. I was going to say most of the 40 year olds that succeed are on the mound. But Nelson Cruz is still out there hitting. So,
yeah.
But you know, so yeah, you take out a guy like Paul DeJong. I mean, because you can have one of those spots, you know, at catcher or whatever. You get two and then three. We've talked about it before. That lineup has had three or four holes in it in before, and it's like, man, you know, if Goldschmidt didn't, you know, two or three years ago, if Goldschmidt didn't do anything, it wasn't gonna happen, you know, or something like that. So it's good to have the offense that you have. But that's, yeah, I think, you know, and kind of getting back to what you're saying is that it's a lot different without Paul DeJong out there.
Yeah. It's, Edmund brings so many things, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just the excitement to lead off the, you know, he's that stereotypical Cardinal of the 80s and 90s really. And I think that changes a lot of it in the fact that he's going to be an all-star this year, could probably do it at a couple different positions. It's pretty crazy. I mean, that's one, he's probably forced himself out of a starter role just because he plays so many different positions, but yeah, you know, he will be. And that's exciting. And watching him at the top as a switch hitter, you know, doing all those things. I mean, it's, you can be forgotten pretty quickly. And, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not sure Gorman is the hitter everybody expected him to be, or maybe they are. I mean, I don't know. The expectations may have been, hey, he's a rookie, he's going to struggle at times. And, you know, that quickly closes the door on DeYoung coming back, because you just don't have the strikeout potential in the lineup that you did. I mean, that's one thing. I mean, they're one of the best teams in the league at avoiding the strikeouts. And even with some of the games where they've done it, you know, 15, 16 times, they've stayed above league level on that. And it's just different. I mean, you could just feel a different pull on this team. And as much as you don't want to say, hey, this is probably one of the reasons why, it does seem like that's one of the reasons why.
Speaking of Tommy Edman, you made me think, how concerned are you that he's going to come back to earth in the second half? Because he's the last 2 years, his OPS has been, OPS plus has been around 90. He's at 114 now, which is lower. I think the last time I looked, it was like 130. You know, he's got 4.5 baseball reference war, which is higher than he's ever had in a whole career. But he is 27, and that's a season that's, you know, often one of your better ones. Are you concerned that, you know, we're going to see him kind of regress to the mean and to some degree in the second half? It may still be a good one, but
yeah,
have we seen the best, or do you think that he's going to be able to continue this?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly hot start. And that, like I said, if you can even go back to, you know, league level at 100 on your OPS plus, I mean, that's as a leadoff spot with what he brings, I still is a successful player. So, I mean, last year, were we concerned with his, you know, what, 40 doubles? You know what I mean by that? I mean, I feel like he brings a lot to the table that even if he struggles, isn't going to be exposed as much as others.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I just kind of came to mind, because you could see
speed,
that.
That tells you what speed does to baseball too.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch and see. I do think that if for some reason he struggles, that he's not going to be run out there on the leadoff spot every day.
Yeah,
like some years, right? I mean, if he starts to not hit. Or if he starts to not hit certain players or whatever the case may be, you know, I don't feel like Marmol's just going to keep running him out there. I mean, he will for a while and we'll be like, what? But, you know, it's not going to be the extended run. It's not going to be a, you know, Brandon Moss 1-for-50 or whatever it was. You know, they're going to shuffle things, because he's not let off all year. I mean, he has most of the year. But they're content to have him hit, you know, sixth too, I think, if he starts to.
Yeah, you know, that was kind of the plan. You know what I mean? That's coming out of spring, it was like, hey, Carlson's where he belongs. Let's relieve the pressure off Edman. And they've been a better team with Edman leading off. So I think that, yeah, that's a chip that they could play pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be that'll be something to watch, I guess. But you talked about Edman maybe being an all-star. Goldschmidt, Arenado are on the finalist list. You figure both of those guys are going. Edman may go. Helsley's getting a lot of buzz for going. I think that's fair. Is that it? Four? That's four's quite a bit.
I would think so. Here's my situation. How far down does the situation turn to Wainwright getting in? You know, because there's always a lot of jockeying. And a guy like Wainwright, I could see like, hey, take somebody else. You know, type situation. But I would think that, you know, that will be brought up.
Yeah, Adam Wainwright has been an all-star how often? Because I feel like he hasn't. He was an all-star in 2010, 13, and 14. He hasn't been an all-star since 14. So I think if he got a chance, I think he'd go. I think he's in the realm. I think he gets burned by the fact that there are at least, you know, right now, four other Cardinals that could go. And when you're looking at the roster sizes and limitations and things like that, it becomes difficult to sometimes fit him. Honestly, if they take a Cardinal pitcher, are they taking Miles Michaelis instead? Because, I mean, let me pull it up, but I feel like it feels like Miles has had the better season, I think, overall. Now, he doesn't have the pull and the cachet that Wainwright does. And, you know, with Melina hurt, you don't have to worry about it, but you wonder if there's a, haven't they at least talked about this kind of legend spot where they could put like a Albert Pujols in, you know, somebody in their last season. But yeah, I think I'm thinking four, but I think if a pitcher goes, I don't know. I think they probably for this year, they might go with Michaelis instead of Wainwright. I'm wondering if Allen's had some mic issues. I don't hear him. So it's possible. So Allen's cat has taken away his abilities to hear me, apparently, which is fair enough. So I think we'll probably wrap it up there. It's probably easiest to do. So I appreciate everybody joining us.
I'm here. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Oh, there he is. Okay, yeah. Never mind. Okay. Yeah, I figured if the cat didn't want to hear us anymore, maybe it was time to.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me back something up here. So okay. I have got, we have a benefit tournament going on this weekend. And it's going to benefit for my high school team. So they get pretty excited to get out there and work the field, which is a blessing for me. That means less I have to do. But they're not very good at being assertive and doing things without me. So within the last 5 minutes, I've probably received 25 phone calls. And I don't mean that. I keep ignoring them, saying, hey, I'm on a call. Can't do this. You know, yada, yada, yada. So you're going to hear me rant about this. So when they don't listen, I put my guard down. Angrily threw my phone away, and right then my cat jumped right on my keyboard and knocked me off of everything. So long story short, it's going to be a good weekend. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it also sounds like they need a firm hand to get out there. So
I have a friend of mine. What I'm close with one of the families of one of the players that I have, and they live right by the ballpark. So what I'll do is I'll leave my tractor over at their house. So they can just drive it over and get some stuff done. Well, we have a 12 game weekend going on, and one of the kids just asked, "Hey, do I need the mower?" Well, unless you want to drag it by hand, if you want to, I mean, you're more welcome. But I'm like,
right ahead.
I thought I had raised my children. I didn't realize that I was going to adopt 25 more.
Yeah, and that's being a coach. You'll always have new ones.
Heck so yes.
Yep. That is part of it. So anyway, well, we will let Alan get out to keep track of all those kind of things. But we'll be with you again next week, probably on Saturday next week. And we will be talking about how this Cardinals team has done over this road trip that takes them through Philadelphia and Atlanta. And it's a step up. So we'll see how it works out. But until next time, for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.